Welcome to the March 10th San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting. We please all stand, or could we have a roll call, please? Mona?
Commissioner Rappa?
Here.
Commissioner Christie?
Here.
Commissioner Malskow?
Here.
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Chairman Liberto Blanc?
Here. And before we stand for the roll call, I'd like to welcome our new planning commissioner, Penny Rappa. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I understand it's welcome back. When did you serve?
I served in 1984, 1985, and then I went on to elected office.
Good. We have corporate memory then. You can help us out.
Oh, I don't know about my memory, but I'll try. Thank you.
Thank you. Will you please all join us for the flag salute?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen.
To let everybody know in the audience that we do ask that anybody who would like to speak on any item to complete a request to speak form. These are located at the back of the room, and the purpose for asking you to fill this out is so that the secretary correctly spells your name in the minutes. And after you fill it out, please bring it forward and identify the item that you would like to speak on. At this point on our agenda, this is an opportunity for anybody in the public to speak on any item that is not listed on the agenda, and this is the public comment period. So if you would like to speak on any item not on the agenda, please fill out a form and come forward. And I do have two people that have filled out forms. The first person is Christina Aguirre.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Christina Aguirre. I live in South Atascadero, and I'm requesting that you declare a moratorium on the TDC program in our area, or at least declare a moratorium on new TDCs in our area. As you have heard from other meetings, people are concerned about the aspects of this TDC program. I won't take the time here to list the many problems with the program as it currently exists. South Atascadero is seen as an ideal receiver area. TDC receiver site applications are coming in at increasing speed into South Atascadero. People are buying property in our area specifically so they can divide the property by use of a TDC and then sell right away at a profit. At its February meeting, the Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council voted to ask county staff for direction on allowing communities to form their own area-wide TDC programs. South Atascadero will be one of these communities to make its own TDC plan. But developing a community-based plan will take time. Meanwhile, South Atascadero is a very popular receiver site area, overriding our land use plan and undermines our neighborhood character. I'm afraid if we don't stop new TDCs from being approved during the time it takes to create the community plan, a lot of damage will be done. Imposing a moratorium on new receiver site applications would be fair to all and would help preserve our neighborhood during the time we are creating our community plan. Will you please help us? Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair, are we not going to have a study session on TDCs later?
We do. We have a study session later this in the day that we'll be talking about TDCs, and hopefully you can stay for that session. You won't be able to. Well, hopefully you'll be able to watch us on TV at some point about that. Okay.
I would just like to briefly respond to Ms. Aguirre's comments. I think one of the great benefits to community-based TDC plans is that the benefits of the plan can be enjoyed locally to offset the impacts that are felt locally. And South Atascadero is a perfect a poster child for how the TDC program could work well, because you've got, if it were locally administered, because you've got the Eagle Ranch there in South Atascadero, which is on the brink of experiencing some fairly significant growth, and if the county could support a locally based TDC program that was able to preserve some significant part of Eagle Ranch, the residents of Atascadero would have the direct benefit of that, and I think that is appropriate and would ameliorate a lot of the concerns that we're hearing from South Atascadero. So thank you for coming down, Ms. Aguirre.
Next person I have that would like to speak under public comment is Eric Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. And I do recognize that the TDCs is on the agenda for a study session, but since the previous speaker brought it up, I would just say that I wholeheartedly agree with her points, and I would also say that this should not necessarily be restricted to South Atascadero, because there is a rising interest throughout the county in creating a local program in each area, and perhaps there should be a moratorium while each area is assessed for its interest.
Eric, will you be here this afternoon?
I do plan to be, so that's okay. All I will say at this point, but I just wanted to piggyback since she brought the topic up. What I did want to mention is that if you want me to come back with this on your last agenda item, I can. But I understand you will be prioritizing from a list of possible study session topics that you have already collected. And I would just like to throw one more possibility on the list. Is this the time so that it's on your list when you talk about it later? Or should I just throw it now and you can talk about it then?
What are you talking about?
You're going to have a study session on prioritizing topics for future study sessions.
Yes, we have that as item 8. We'll be talking about a number of items for future study sessions. So if you'd like to talk about prioritizing those items, we'll talk about that later on today.
Right. And the new item that I might suggest adding to your list is Senate Bill 18, which puts new guidelines and protocols for tribal consultation in areas of sensitive Native American resources. And it has just taken effect, and I think it's best to know right up front what it calls for.
Right.
So that's another suggested topic to put on the list, and we'll talk about the priorities of the list later today.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak on any item that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing no one else coming forward, we will now go on to the consent agenda, and I do have some speakers that would like to talk about the consent agenda, and they are all the item A.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Oh, I apologize. I've gone
staff wrong. Updates.
Planning staff update,
okay.
Warren. I'm sorry for that, and Warren, I'm so interested in getting on to the items. Pat, Warren.
I just wanted, on behalf of the department, to also welcome Penny Rappa back, looking forward to working with her. And I wanted to let the commissioners know we've been working with the city planning directors on a planning commissioners training program, and we're just about lined up. It'll be on April 9th. It'll go from 8:30 till 3, and part of the meeting will be focused on basics that commissioners need to know about state law and general plans and coastal plans and ordinance requirements and CEQA. Part of the meeting will actually be a lunchtime panel with commissioners that have been on the various city and county planning commissions for a while, offering information and advice to new commissioners about the tough decisions that you have to make. And the final speaker in the afternoon will be Paul Sikorski from the Local Government Commission, and he'll be focused on smart growth issues and also on affordable housing design. And Dana Lilly will briefly discuss with you AB 1818, which has new standards for multifamily development and bonuses and what all. So we just wanted to get that on your schedule. If you're available on April 9th, I'll have more information at your next meeting, but I thought I'd just let you know and get it on your schedule ahead of time.
Where is that?
It'll be in the planning in the city county library community room.
That's a Saturday, I presume?
It's a Saturday, yes. Thank you.
And to piggyback on what Pat said, I have one item I wanted to inform the commission about, and I'll pass this out. And you may be aware of this already. There is a third in a series of Community 2050 summits scheduled for tomorrow here in San Luis Obispo from 9 to noon at the Grace Church on Oso Street. And it's a summing up of what was heard in the prior two sessions. One was held in South County. The other was held in Templeton, I believe. And it's looking at where we should grow, where we shouldn't grow, how we should grow, getting community input on that, and using computer modeling to see what ideas can end up looking like in terms of real-life scenarios. And it's a very interesting exercise. And it's being sponsored by the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, among other agencies. And our department has had a presence in those meetings. I believe Chuck has been in attendance. And I would encourage you, if your schedule allows, to maybe look in. I think you'd find it quite rewarding. I don't have anything else on staff updates. Typically, the commission likes us to respond to the public comment. I wasn't here for the first speaker, so perhaps Pat could.
Your first speaker spoke to a request for a moratorium on TDCs in the South Tascadero area. You will be discussing TDCs in a study session this afternoon. Obviously, the decision on whether to impose a moratorium isn't a decision the commission can make. You can listen to the comments, and if you have comments that you want to pass along to the Board of Supervisors, we could do that, but that would be something that the board would really have to concur with, and I would encourage the speaker to make her concerns and the community's concerns known to the Board of Supervisors. I do believe they're aware of it from some community meetings, but that would be my recommendation.
In terms of Eric's comments, I think they were generally on related to an agenda item later in the meeting on a further discussion of possible study session topics. And yes, SB 18 is big on our radar screen now, and we probably should touch on it later today. And I'll try to contact the appropriate person and the Environmental Division to help in that discussion. But again, it'll only be, do you want to schedule it, and when might we do it in terms of priority? We're not going to discuss the meat of the item itself, because, of course, we wouldn't be prepared.
And, Warren, I see Matt is here, and just only because I read in the newspaper about the Cambria tanks, that the Planning Commission decision on the Cambria tanks have been appealed directly to the Coastal Commission, bypassing the Board of Supervisors, which is my understanding is first.
That is correct. Matt Jansen, planning staff. Good morning. Yes, we received a local appeal within the two-week appeal period on February 24th, and we indicated to the potential appellant that we were charging a fee, and at that point the appellant had the choice whether to pay the fee and go to the Board of Supervisors or not pay the fee and be forwarded to the Coastal Commission. And that appeal has been forwarded to the Coastal Commission, exhausting the local appeal process, so we are not going to the Board of Supervisors. The Coastal Commission's appeal process has formally begun and expires next Wednesday. I believe that's the 16th. They've received two appeals so far, and there's a potential third one out there. So,
okay.
Could you, I don't understand this bypassing the board. I thought the idea was to let the local people come to a resolution, and if the parties weren't satisfied, then they went up the next chain.
Yeah, this is extremely rare. This is the only case I know of. And for people that have even worked here for 25 years, it's potentially the only case they've seen. It might be the only case we see for a long time. We have a policy and procedure to hold on to the local authority in almost every case. However, we had agreement with the executive director of the Coastal Commission that this would be a case, because it is a rare situation, that they would be willing to allow us to levy the fee and exhaust the local remedies. In other words, not go to the board, not take up another 2 or 3 months of a local process. And I think what everybody essentially agreed to, even CCSD, was that the decision is not going to be decided at the local level. We've had, we've put in hundreds of hours, Coastal Commission staff, local staff, CCSD staff, and come to the realization that the decision is going to happen at the Coastal Commission level, so let's just get it there. So it's a rare, extremely rare instance, and we do hold on to local authority in all other cases.
I would just add to that that we believe the issue, and the CCSD believes the issue, is the one of public safety, that they have really been pushing all of the agencies that this needs to get in place as soon as possible. And so if the additional time of preparing and going through the board hearings and waiting the appeal period, when it was ultimately apparent it would be appealed by somebody, this would move it forward to the Coastal Commission directly and get a decision sooner that the CCSD can either proceed on the basis or take legal action if they aren't in concurrence.
And I would also just like to make the point that even though this may be a first for San Luis Obispo County, it's not a first statewide. This is a process that's was anticipated in the original drafting of the Coastal Act, and it's an option that's made available to local governments for situations specifically like this when you've got a project that the resolution needs to be expedited. So I just really want to underscore for all those listening, this is not some nefarious attempt to end run the Board of Supervisors. This was a decision that was made collectively in the interest of resolving this as soon as possible in the best interests of the citizens of Cambria and the rest of the county.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for staff before we go on to the consent agenda? Okay. Any other comments or questions for staff? We'll now go on to the consent agenda. And I do have a couple of requests to speak on item A, and I will pull the consent agenda item. Lana, will you please read the item?
Consent agenda item A is a determination of conformity with the general plan for the abandonment of the last 2.3-mile right-of-way of Upper Lopez Canyon Road. The project is located in the rural area of the Los Padres planning area. Land use categories, rural lands, agriculture, and open space. Applicants, Rigetti Brothers. County file number SUB2004-00125, Supervisorial District 4.
Okay, and first person I have that would like to speak on this item is Tim Carmel.
Madam Chair, possibly you want to commence with the staff report first. I don't know if staff has any comments they'd like to make on it.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Larry Kelly, a senior planner. A couple points we want to make. The applicant isn't really Rigetti Brothers. We should correct that to be Tim Carmel. Tim Carmel represents several applicants, and he gave us a long list of parcels, and when it was entered in the computer, we just picked the first one and made that the applicant, and that was incorrect. So Tim Carmel would be best to be listed as the applicant in this case. He represents a number of owners, and he can attest to the exact owners that he represents along the road. We did get the letter from Sensheimer. She will have him bag it, and I'd like to go over that for a few minutes. There's two points that they're making is that they want to be assured that they have access to the road, that if it is gated, that they have keys to the gate. Normally when you do a gated road like this, you have chains that are broken in several links, and each one of them have a separate key and separate gate lock and key to that gate. So that's something that'll have to work out between the parties involved. When you abandon a road that was not dedicated on a previous map, for example, many of the roads that the county takes over were dedicated on a previous map, like the town of any of the ranchos or any of the old maps. They're easement roads that serve all the owners on the maps, and when the county accepts them and then goes back and abandons the road, it reverts to its previous status, and all the property owners along that road automatically have rights to the road. In this kind of case, where the county just acquired the road over time, we would have to reserve out easements to the property owners along the road with the abandonment. So we may want to note as a possible condition to engineering that they should be reserving out an easement to the property owners along the road following the abandonment. So that's pretty much all I have, unless you have any further questions.
I have a question for County Council. You educated us the last time. We're just receiving and filing this. This is, as I understand it, this is the vehicle by which the general public is informed that this is coming up and will, in fact, be a hearing at the Board of Supervisors, and all sorts of complicated issues will be discussed and decided upon there. We're not going to do any decisions in that regard here, are we?
My understanding of this item, and I thought staff may mention it, is that the Planning Department made the conformity determination, and there has not been an appeal to the Board, so it's like the other one that we had, it's placed on the agenda for a receive and file. And any comments that you wish to make to the Board when they hold their hearing on the abandonment?
Wouldn't the appeal take place after this hearing, since this is presumably the first opportunity the public has had to hear the issues?
No, the appeal has to be filed within a certain number of days of the Planning Director's decision. This is not an appeal to the Planning Commission.
How is the Planning Director's decision posted to the public?
I would ask staff to respond to that. The code provides that the appeal has to be taken from the Planning Director's decision. So what's before you today is not determination whether it's in conformity with the general plan, but a receive and file. And I think that's made clear with the cover letter of the staff report.
It may be clear to some people, Mr. Orton, but I'm still very perplexed about this whole process. And maybe, Madam Chair,
we'll ask staff to clarify. Pat, could you clarify how people are noticed of the Planning Director's decision on this item?
There isn't notice that a decision has been made. This is really the first place that the item is in a public venue.
So there is no opportunity for the public to appeal the Planning Director's decision because there's no notice to the public.
There isn't a separate legal notice.
There's a notice, I believe, to the applicant who's asked for the...
That is correct. But
well, that doesn't suffice. I mean, that doesn't count as public notice to notice the applicant. I think, Madam Chair, we need to have either a study session or a follow-up meeting or something, because this is very perplexing, this whole process.
Possibly we can identify this as something we can talk about this afternoon, because I agree. I think it is confusing to the public that if the Planning Director makes a decision and then 3 weeks or a month later this appears on the Planning Commission agenda as receive and file, that people may confuse it and think that they can, that we're somehow are making a decision and they can appeal our decision, that maybe we need to look at that and clarify that. So if we
could include that in your discussion this afternoon.
Right, and if the other commissioners agree, possibly maybe we need to look at that section of the ordinance and ask the Board to clarify that, or ask staff to clarify that. Is that acceptable? Okay. So with that, any other clarifications from staff?
I did have a question for Mr. Kelly. Is this a road that the county owns in fee title, or is this a road that the county just has an easement over?
As far as I know, it's just an easement over the road.
But
it's
we're not
county right away.
We're not certain one way or the other. You said we sort of acquired it over time. So
for years, the county practice was just right aways. And only recently have we started the practice of actually acquiring fee title to some of our roads. Those roads we want to have control, more access on. This kind of a road, since it's been so long, I would assume it is only a right-of-way.
And maybe Mr. Marshall can provide additional information. Or Mr. Smith.
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I'd like to call for help from worker Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, I'm Tim Smith, the county right-of-way agent. Larry Kelly's correct. This is a road right-of-way, a road easement. It's not fee held. It's not fee title to the county.
So who owns the underlying fee?
The adjacent owners.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Okay. We will now ask Mr. Carmel to come forward, please, and address the commission.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the commission. My name is Tim Carmel. I represent the applicants in this matter, who are John Troutner, Nick Murphy, and Mark Chacone, who own property on Upper Lopez Canyon Road and the portion that we're seeking abandonment of. So those are the actual applicants, and I apologize for any confusion. Very briefly, the matter before you, as has succinctly been stated by Commissioner Rose, is a receive and file report, a conformity report from the planning director. Very narrow issue. Is the proposed abandonment in conformance with the county's general plan? That's the issue before you. That determination was made by the planning director. This is, in fact, a ministerial action. You're receiving and filing a report. That's A. B, issues raised by Mr. Sinsheimer, on behalf of some of the other owners on Upper Lopez Canyon, relate to private property access. That issue, private property access, will be dealt with in due course. It's not relevant to the issue before you today, which is the proposed abandonment in conformity with your general plan? And staff has found that to be the case. It is in conformity. Lastly, we have busily been working to try to rectify all private property access issues before it gets to the Board of Supervisors, because that will be a very significant and relevant issue to the determination of abandonment. And we all acknowledge that. The four affected property owners are trying to work out the details of a reciprocal access easement that will address and resolve all private property access issues, including access through the U.S. Forest Service parcel, which is a part of this proposed abandonment. I have actually been waiting for property descriptions from the applicant's attorney for about 3 months now so that I could complete this reciprocal access agreement, which is not really relevant to today's determination. But I did want to add for the record that that's a very serious consideration, which will be resolved at or before the time the Board of Supervisors hears the matter. But just to reiterate, what's before you today, and I recommend that you ask County Council to verify this, is a receive and file ministerial action. The relevance of private property issues is non-existent. It's just not relevant today. It will be dealt with in due course. And glad to respond to any questions and reserve the right to return if there are any new issues that arise.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Carmel? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Trotner, I pronounced that correctly?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you. My name is John Trotner, and I am one of the applicants in this matter. And there's not much more I can say than what Tim Carmel has just expressed, and that is, it was my understanding that this was simply a matter of a determination made by the Planning Department and sent on to the Commission, and then it is done at that point. We, as Tim said, we have the issue of reciprocal easement, and we're working on that, and that would be a given, obviously, before the supervisors would allow the abandonment. But those details have not yet been worked out. But we just like to see this thing continue moving forward. This step is important, and we continue on, and we're trying to get the matter handled before the fire season comes, because we're concerned about getting the road closed prior to the fire season. We've been working on a long time, and so I would hope that you would ask this fella and get it done with. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, the next person I have is Warren Sinsheimer.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Warren Sinsheimer of San Luis Obispo. I believe, as has been referenced by Mr. Kelly and others, that you have the letter which I sent to you. On behalf of Dr. Mano and Mr. Hahn, I want to clarify, based on what Mr. Hahn told me just before the commencement of this proceeding, that while the information that was in there regarding the position of the Rigetti family was the best information I had at the time, that at this point Mr. Hahn advises me that the Rigetti family is neither for or against what's before you. I would also point out, in addition to the confusing information that was in your agenda regarding who the applicant is and who the and which parcel was involved in making the application, that the agenda doesn't say this is a receive and file. The agenda says it's before you for a determination. And that, coupled with the fact that there is no notice of the director's decision, makes it very confusing to members of the public and people whose property is seriously affected by potentially losing their only meaningful access as to exactly what's going on. We have been in discussion with Mr. Carmel. I don't think it's productive in this context to be back and forth about who's provided what information to whom. We are waiting to see a draft of a reciprocal easement, and we are hopeful that there will ultimately be a resolution as between our clients and Mr. Carmel's clients, but we have not seen a draft of that, and we are concerned that any action takes on a life and a momentum of its own, and while this is has been characterized as an insignificant or ministerial decision, It does have to do with general plan conformity. It's hard to believe that having property without effective access is consistent with any kind of planning. And we would simply request that until the parties have had an opportunity either to work this out between themselves or to realize that they can't do that, that the public process not go forward. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. By the way, this road's been open for time immemorial, if you will, and it's difficult to understand how one additional fire season makes a difference. And even if everything moves at optimal pace, given the weather in the last couple of days, fire season may be upon us within a week or two, and it's difficult to know how we're going to really get anything accomplished before fire season. That seems to me to be a false standard against which to measure what's happening here.
Okay. Mr. Carmel, did the property owners along that stretch of the road, did they have any other opportunity for access from any other road? I'm not familiar with any. I've ridden my horse on that section, and I'm not familiar with any actual residences up there. So I'm unclear how big those parcels are and if there's any other access points to any of them or all of them.
Sorry, were you
Do you mean your question,
Carmel,
to Mr. Sinsheimer?
I'm sorry, didn't I say Mr. Sinsheimer?
You said Mr. Carmel.
Oh, Carmel.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to turn my back on you. I thought you were addressing that to Mr. Carmel.
My apologies, Mr. Sinsheimer.
If you look at a title report, which we are advised by Mr. Carmel will be forthcoming, we expect to see whether or not there is other enforceable access. There are other roads that come in that people have non-enforceable permission to use, in other words, what we would call a license. But in the case of Mr. Mano or Dr. Mano's property and Mr. Hahn's property, there is no other improved access, and there would be serious problems with improving the access in that location given the difficulty of terrain and other considerations that would be involved in that.
And so am I hearing that it's unclear whether or not all the property owners do or don't have other access potentials? Some of them you know do, but they're problematic, and others we're not sure?
That's my understanding, and we're waiting for title work that is presently being done, I'm advised by Mr. Carmel.
I agree that that seems like sort of a critical piece of information that we would need to move this forward. But
I have a question. Did you get a copy of the agenda and the staff report?
Not the staff report, just the agenda.
But you got the agenda?
Yes.
Okay, and on the agenda it has that the recommendation is to receive and file. So you knew that, that's what they were recommending.
Right, but determination suggested decision-making process.
Well, it says that's what they it says determination of conformity, but then if you look later on, it talks about that the action of the Planning Commission is to receive and file, and the staff report clearly indicates that the commission is to receive and file. It says the recommendation is that that's mm-hmm. what the commission is to do, is to receive and file.
Okay.
And so that's what the task of the Planning Commission is to do. That's what our action is today.
But we have the option whether or not to receive or receive and file. I mean, we've had that recommendation before, and we've opted not to receive and file.
Right, but I think we have to have good reason for why we're not going to receive and file. It's a ministerial action, and we have to have reason for not doing it.
I just want to reserve the small modicum of discretion that we seem to have.
Yeah.
I want to give that away.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? All right, seeing none. Thank you very much. Anybody else that would like to speak on this item?
I was just going to recommend that perhaps Tim Smith can explain what occurs when the board formal hearing on whether this abandonment should occur relative to protection of individual rights of access, and that may help you understand what his piece of the puzzle accomplishes.
Madam Chair, Pat's correct. There is a long process involved in this. I've had discussions with the attorneys, and we're attempting to arrange a meeting with all the parties to get the items, the issues clarified. But the sequence involved is after the conformity report is received, the Public Works Department prepares a resolution of intention as formal notice. There's a hearing set by that resolution at the time of the public hearing. I'm sure that we'll have all these issues regarding access and other relevant things hammered out before we bring it to the Board of Supervisors. We have a reputation with Mr. Marshall and his division that we don't bring controversial items to the board if we can help it. So I assure you that'll be our number one priority.
I actually have a question for Mr. Smith. In reading the supporting documents in the staff report, there were some letters dating back to 2001 from CDF and the Forest Service. And at that time, they were simply requesting that the county put up a gate on that road. There was no discussion in any of those letters about actually abandoning the road. And because for members of the public who may not have had a chance to read the staff report, what we're talking about here is a 2.3-mile section of road that leads directly to the National Forest from Big Falls. And it's a road that's been used probably, you know, since before the county had a general plan. And while I'm absolutely 100% all for keeping vehicles out of the wilderness area, I'm very concerned about retaining the public's ability through, you know, hiking, horseback riding, mountain bike riding, to continue to access the National Forest. So, and I understand that there's an easement that's going to be reserved for those purposes, but it just sort of struck me like we're cutting butter with a chainsaw here, when all that was really being requested was to put up a gate, and now what's being recommended is abandonment of the road. That significantly reduces the county's ability, I think, to have continued meaningful management and oversight of that very important public access to the National Forest. So I'm just wondering how we got from the request from the agencies to put up a gate to a request from the adjacent property owners to abandon the road.
This particular issue has been festering for about 18 years. Dates back to Supervisor Brackett meeting with various sheriffs, et cetera, and with the property owners out there. In 2001, the matter was brought before this, before the Board of Supervisors as a termination of maintenance up there. That was a clarification, really, of the public rights out there. At that particular time, Supervisor Bianchi, Supervisor Ovid, and Supervisor Pinard asked for a clarification that ultimately a gate be considered up there, and that's what the original petition was for, was a gate. We couldn't get that far, but we wanted to get to the termination of maintenance first. So it was kind of a step process. The board said we want to ultimately get a gate up there to address those issues, to consider and guarantee those equestrian, pedestrian, bicycle rights up to the U.S. Forest Service properties, and also to protect the public, the private rights that are up there. So in order to put the gate up there, they have to go through a road abandonment process. And so the termination, the 2001 matter was termination of maintenance up there, and we were pending to this brilliant day of 2005 to bring forth a vacation so that they could accommodate the installation of a gate up there.
So the short answer is you can't gate a public road unless you abandon it.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Rose?
I have a question for staff. What happens if we, if the planning director has made a mistake? In fact, there's some clear evidence that this would be in violation of the general plan. What would be our role then? Because he'd already done something, and it turns out to be incorrect. What would we do?
Well, I'll take a stab at it, and then Jim can join in. We're reporting to you, we've made this determination, and we've sent it to the Public Works Department. If in your deliberations you came to a different conclusion, and you pointed to different policies, you can send your thoughts separate from this determination, and the board can consider that as part of the matter. I can't recall an instance where we've had a determination and then the department concluded, no, that was the wrong determination. Jim, do you recall?
No, I don't.
I'm not suggesting that it has, but I'm just wondering how this process works.
I agree with Pat's comments that you could send a letter to the board with your own recommendation.
But the last time we tried to do that, you told us that our recommendation couldn't be made, so...
The last time you considered doing that, I told you I thought that what you're recommending was not legal, and the commission decided not to send it on. You can still make a recommendation. I didn't tell you you couldn't do it.
I think that we really need to talk about this whole process, because I think that there's so many different levels, and the ordinance says one thing, and there are different, the commission has to do something different, and I really think we need to get in more discussion about it. But coming back to this, I guess let's get back to what the commission is here to do, and that is that the planning director made a decision, and that was that planning director found that this is in conformance with the general plan. And it was not appealed, and the appeal period is over with. It's now before the Planning Commission to receive and file. The question from Commissioner Rose was, what if we disagree with the Planning Director, the Planning Commission? The appeal period is over with. But what if the what reason would the Planning Commission have for not receiving and filing this decision? What findings would we make as a planning commission to say, we're not going to receive and file this? What findings would we possibly have for making that decision? County Council?
Well, I think the action before you is receive and file. If you do not do that, I don't think that will stop the process.
It doesn't change what the planning director has done then?
No.
Right. This is just like saying, here's a piece of paper, go ahead and file it, and if we don't take the action, it doesn't override what the planning director has done, it still goes forward.
That's correct.
Okay.
Why are these even coming to the Planning Commission? I mean, if the one action that we can take, receive and file, doesn't even matter in terms of the process that flows from there, what?
Yeah. I think that's a good question, and I think that's something, that's why we need to look at this overall process. What's the purpose for this even coming to the Planning Commission, other than it sounds like it's informational?
I would say it's informational.
It's just informational. That's the only reason for it, is just to let us know this is what the planning director did, and that's the only reason for it, and that's the only purpose for it.
Well, it doesn't just let you know. It lets the public
right.
know that a determination has been made. It's an early awareness that an abandonment is under consideration. It lets them find out how to participate. When the formal actual hearing on whether this is a good idea to abandon it or not occurs at the Board of Supervisors.
But if it lets them know after you say that the appeal period has already expired, I have to take issue with that interpretation. It just is completely illogical to me that an appeal period would expire with no public notice before the first public hearing on that item. I can't imagine what kind of analytical yoga one would have to go through in order to reach that conclusion. So, again, for this particular item, like I said, I am all for keeping the vehicles out of the wilderness area and reducing the fire danger and the erosion and everything associated with that. But I just, the more of these road abandonments we see and the more convoluted the process becomes as a result of the discussion, I'm having a hard time sort of being swept along with the reasoning that's kind of flowing through these meetings.
I think we need to, again, I got to get back to the point, I think we need to talk about this process, and we'll do it this afternoon. I heard support from the commission and from staff. We'll talk about this afternoon about this section of the ordinance. And maybe what we need to do is what Commissioner Christie said, is look at it, and possibly if there's some way we can tie the appeal period in with the Planning Commission, you know, placing on here saying this is when the appeal period begins, letting the public know about it, and then at least they're notified. We can talk about this afternoon. Commissioner Rose, did you want to say something?
Well, if one's looking for a reason to suggest that an error was made, and I'm not saying that there has or has not, the issue of whether we are abandoning the right to someday have access to that national forest land, maybe today it doesn't make sense, but I can't look into the future and say 100 years from now whether we should have a road going there for some recreational purpose. So I'm a bit reluctant to give up that right, but then again, I'm not on the Board of Supervisors, so.
Right.
I think just for the sake of the experiment, we should not receive and file this, to just to sort of see what happens.
It doesn't matter if you receive it or file. It doesn't matter because it's ministerial.
I think the attorneys might have something to say about that at the end of the process. So I would just, out of my intellectual curiosity, move that we don't receive and file this report.
Okay, is that a motion? I have a motion on the floor not to receive and file this. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a second. Any discussion on that? Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Christie?
Aye.
Commissioner Rose?
Aye.
Get on to our public hearing now. Okay, public hearing. Lona, please introduce the item.
Hearing number one is a continued hearing to consider a proposal by RC Arrow Farms for a conditional use permit to allow for the construction of a winery, banquet pavilion, administration building, conference building, tasting room, parking spaces, wastewater pond, access roads, including improvements to an existing creek crossing and signage. 36 annual events, 10 with 75 people, 22 with 150 people, and 4 with 300 people, including amplified music from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Shandon Carrizo Planning Area, Land Use Category Agriculture, County File Number D030030D, Supervisorial District 1, Susan Cayado, Project Manager.
Madam Chair, in Susan's absence, this is a request for continuance off calendar for this item.
Okay, any questions? I will ask if there's anybody in the audience that is here to speak on this item, that this item is being recommended by staff to be continued off calendar. Is there anybody in the audience that's here to speak on this item? Okay, seeing no one, could I have a motion to continue this off calendar?
I move that we continue this item off calendar.
You have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. First, second, any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion carries. On to the second public hearing item. Lona, could you please introduce the next item?
Item number two is a hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend Section 22.30.470C, 22.104.040C, and 22.104.040D, the Land Use Ordinance, Title 22 of the County Code, to allow for the establishment of secondary dwellings in the South Atascadero area where secondary dwellings are not currently allowed. County File Number G02002L, Cammie Griffin, Project Manager.
Madam Chair, I'm actually Cammie Griffin this time. this is a request to continue this item to your April 28th meeting. This is in order for staff to obtain all of the information that the Planning Commission requested at their meeting in November. We have yet still not obtained all the information or all the answers to your questions.
Okay. And I do have a request to speak. If somebody would like to speak on this item, did you want to come forward and speak on this item? You can't come back on the items being recommended by staff to be continued to April the 28th? If you can't, you're not sure you can be here on the 28th, would you like to come forward and make your comments?
Right.
As state your name for the record, please.
Okay. My name is Christina Aguirre, and I live in South Atascadero, and I see that the staff recommendation is continuing the secondary dwelling hearing until April 28th. Please be aware that as more people hear about secondary dwellings in South Atascadero, opposition to them continues to grow. And as I heard someone once comment, we need to remember each dwelling goes with the land, not with the person. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay, I also have a request from Eric Greening to speak on this item. Eric?
I'm Eric Greening, and I'm also, one is never certain when whether one can be back, but I have a question in terms of the planning for that hearing. The Santa Margarita Area Advisory Committee has requested that the cumulative impact of the TDCs as well as the second units be looked at in connection with this item. And so I'm just wondering if staff is planning to incorporate that into the presentation at that time so that we can be prepared. Thank you very much.
Okay. Cammie, can you respond to what Eric asked?
I'm sorry, we were talking. What did Eric ask?
Eric raised the concern that at the Santa Margarita Advisory Meeting that they requested that the cumulative impact of secondary dwellings and potential for TDCs be looked at, and they're wondering if that's being handled in the preparation of the revisions.
It's actually being handled in a couple of ways. It will be addressed as part of the revised negative declaration that's being prepared. In addition, because of the comments and letters that have been received, staff is actually proposing a change to the ordinance that would prohibit secondary dwellings on parcels that used TDCs to be created.
Okay, great. Any other? Did you want to say something?
Madam Chair, John Nall, staff with the Planning Department. I wanted to clarify one thing that Cammie just said, and that is that it's very possible that we won't come back with a revised negative declaration.
As a majority of the board, they did recommend the processing of the amendment.
I understand that, but was it because of water traffic, or was it because of the city of Atascadero did not allow them, we wanted to be like them?
Oh, the original reason for prohibition
right.
was actually to match the city of Atascadero.
Okay.
Great. Any other questions for staff? Okay, seeing none, do we have a motion to continue this item?
I didn't want to tromp on the District 5 rep. It's her.
I move to continue.
Okay, we have a first, do we have a second? Okay, we have first, second. Any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, the item's been continued to April the 28th. We are now on to item 3. Lona, please introduce the next item.
Item 3 is a hearing to consider a request by Leo Michaud for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide an existing 2 parcels into 41 residential lots for sale and or development, and 1 non-buildable open space parcel. Tract improvements include a public trail, utility easements, drainage improvements, and an extension of the existing local road system, residential single-family land use category, Salinas River planning area, county file number S030129T, tract 2605, supervisorial district 1. Elizabeth Cavanaugh, project manager.
Madam Chair, I am now Elizabeth Cavanaugh, Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff. Elizabeth is ill today, so I'm going to try and cover her project for her. As announced by the clerk, this is a request for a 42-lot residential single-family subdivision. It's located in the community of San Miguel, just south of the sewage treatment plant. The site is actually a remainder parcel from a tract that was approved in 1991, and then in 2003, the Board of Supervisors approved rezoning of this property from residential suburban to residential single family, as shown here. It was in anticipation of this tract coming forward. The property is currently residential single family. It's adjacent to multifamily zoning that is being developed right now with a small lot subdivision. As you notice, the site is between the railroad track here and the Salinas River. In fact, a portion of the site is within the Salinas River. This is the map layout. You can see it actually continues this small lot tract that's in the residential multifamily land use category. It continues the same road system and the same lotting pattern. It also shows you the large open space parcel that's within the river. There were 3 main issues associated with this tract. The first one is archaeology. The site is within an archaeologically sensitive area, and so to protect potential resources, the applicant has agreed to retain a county-approved archaeologist and a Native American representative to monitor all ground-disturbing activities. They've also agreed to submit a monitoring plan, and those are brought forth in conditions of approval. The second issue was the Salinas River. To minimize impacts to that corridor, the applicant has agreed to install fencing during construction to keep the construction activities out of the river. In addition, they've agreed to prepare and implement a spill contingency and cleanup plan. And also, they will be putting the portion of the site that's in the Salinas River into open space. The last issue was noise. If you can remember from the land use category map, the site is very close to the adjacent railroad. And the applicant has agreed to use either a sound wall or a sound berm to mitigate outside noise problems, impacts, and use some construction techniques on some of the lots that are closest to the railroad to minimize indoor noise impacts. The recommendation is to adopt the negative declaration and to approve the tentative tract map subject to the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B. And staff would like to propose one change to the conditions. It is on page 3-13, condition 35, which is the requirement of a drainage plan. Even though this will probably be captured in the drainage plan, we wanted to add some specific language that discusses a pass-through storm drain that will be required. So at the very end of that sentence, staff is recommending that you add, including a pass-through storm drain adequately sized to handle the 50-year storm from all upslope areas from the western property line to the Salinas River. Also provide an adequate corridor, parentheses, storm drain and surface flow for the 100-year runoff to prevent flooding of structures in the area. This is basically to conduct the water from the adjacent areas
that just pond and don't really drain to anywhere until they evaporate or percolate. The county has prepared a community-wide drainage study which recommends the implementation of a full-on storm drain system, a series of culverts that will collect water and convey it to the Salinas River, ultimately, with appropriate treatment and so forth. And that's a brand-new plan that's just been adopted by the Board of Supervisors, and this is one of our first opportunities to implement a piece of the puzzle as we work toward ultimately improving drainage for the whole community. This requirement will result in this project not making the community any worse and making its part of the community that much better.
So this was designed, or the language that Cammie just read into the record, this is going to implement what the negative deck said about drainage and the new community drain plan, at least
exactly.
In this small area.
The language, in fact, if you weren't fast enough to take dictation,
yeah.
The language comes directly from my department's referral response, which I had my finger on a moment ago. Now I've lost. Page 3-35. If you can read Mr. Goodwin's writing, that's the language that Cammie was providing you. And its intent is satisfy the negative declaration and implement the community drainage plan.
Okay, and going back to this letter from the Lime Mountain Companies, it concludes the county should complete the drainage studies to move the water from the side hills west of Mission, across Mission, and the railroad tracks down the Salinas River. When the studies are complete, funding found, and the improvement installed, then this project can proceed. And what I'm hearing you say is, in fact, these drainage studies are done, you have a plan, and this is a small piece of it.
That's right.
Thank you. Okay, a couple other questions. On page 3-8, condition 4, a private easement shall be reserved on the map to access lots 14 and 40. And as I got my large-scale map, and I was very pleased to get this, I didn't have to get out my magnifying glass. What about 17? It appears to me that it also is going to need a private easement. Or did I miss something?
I'm going to have to get out my large scale.
Yours is even larger. Well, while you're looking that one up, I'll have another question. And I bet Mr. Nall's going to end up answering this one. And that's on the next page, conditions 16 and 17, it says the applicant shall revise the project plans to include a vertical articulation landscaping adjacent to the sound wall if used. The next one says what we'll do with the earthen berm if used. Okay, I'm the applicant. I'm not going to use either one of them. Although, in fact, the environmental document said you should use one of them. Where does it say you have to do this, one of these? Because the way I'm reading it, well...
Condition 37 says, prior to final inspection of tract improvements, the applicant shall construct the approved sound wall or earthen berm. So it does require construction of one or the other on page 3-14 at the top. And you're correct. Lot 17 does need an access easement.
Okay. So I'm one for two there. Okay, so we're going to make a change on condition 5 to add lot 17. Okay, now I'm sure I'm going to win this next one.
Excuse me, if I could interject. The issue is a private access easement, correct, not a 10-foot public wide easement. So the addition of lot 17 should be to condition 4, not 5. We're talking about an access easement.
That's correct.
Right, and I thought that's what I said.
No, you said condition 5, and I think you mean condition 4.
I meant 4.
Okay.
Listen to what I mean, not what I said.
Okay. But the public record doesn't know what you mean sometimes, so...
Unfortunately.
You're 1.5.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get 2 out of this one, then. Okay, on page 314, condition 38D... Doesn't make any sense. Ends in notes required building restriction in the on the sheet. I know I'm winning that one.
Yes,
and actually,
one or the other.
Two out of that because that also appears on page 321, condition 39C ends the same way.
It should just be on the sheet. In the should be deleted.
Notes required building and. Oh, good. We've taken care of one of them with our drainage. The other item was that took care of that one too. I'm done.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have a question of Mr. Marshall. On the storm drainage, normally we have percolation basins. This is just running it to the river and it commingles with the flow in the river?
We use those basins in communities that are characterized by sand dune formations where there aren't any water courses to release the drainage to. And there's a series of undrained depressions in your district, for example. So it's a very common tool that we use. But in this case, we're able to release directly to a significant water course, and that's the more appropriate. Plus, I don't think that the soil in this area lends itself to percolation as much as the sandy soil in the South County area.
All right, thank you.
That sounds like a direct discharge into a waterway.
It is, and it will be subject to complying with the requirements, the permitting requirements that apply to that.
So does that mean that there's going to be some mechanism for filtering out the polluted runoff
and
contaminants
that.
In that water?
Exactly that, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Any other questions for staff? Commissioner? Yes.
On condition number 39, which deals with the CCNRs, that which would be incorporated into them, it's indicated that this is kind of additional development to a tract that was approved. Correct? It's kind of a finalizing of the first tract.
You can see from the...
Right.
That this was, yes, it's a continuation of this track.
I guess what I'm asking is then will there be an incorporation of both homeowner associations and reference CCNRs so that we can consolidate and conform these two areas to each other?
I would actually defer that to have you ask the applicant that. That's certainly an option that the applicant has, but I'm not certain if they're going to pursue that option.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Christie?
Yeah, I have a few questions and comments as well. The
there was a finding that was very hopeful and optimistic, and I'm all for hope and optimism, but it was noted in the staff report that there's a number of illegal activities going on in the Salinas riverbed in the form of motorcycle riding and off-road vehicles, et cetera. We're familiar with that in the 5th District because that goes on quite heavily in Atascadero, which is even more urbanized than San Miguel. And I had to kind of question the analysis that those illegal activities would be likely reduced by as a result of the increased development in the area because there'd be more people that would be calling the sheriffs, et cetera. It's been our experience in Atascadero that the more people that come to live and build along the river, the more those activities increase. And so I think in reality it's very likely that the residents of this new tract are going to be riding their motorcycles and taking their trucks out there, etc. And I think we should request an additional an addition to the CCNRs that specify that residents in this tract won't be at least contributing to those existing activities. I know enforcement is always going to be, extremely problematic, but I think we should do what we can, where we can, to try and provide some more, ability for those enforcements to take place. Is that acceptable?
I think that's something that could be added. There's an existing F in the CCNRs that requires notification to the property owners that there's this illegal activity happening and you may be subject to noise from it. Certainly we can add a G that says that it's not allowed.
That would be helpful.
Sure.
Because I honestly don't think people know that. They look at the riverbed, they think it's their backyard, they want to go and anyway. I had some questions about the 25-foot easement for the trail corridor that's going to be as one of the conditions, and I just I'm hoping that that's going to be part of what will ultimately be a comprehensive trail system through that San Miguel. Is that it's not just going to be like a trail to nowhere, or?
I'm Jan DeLeo with County Parks. Under our 1991 adopted trails plan, the Salinas River Trail runs all the way from Santa Margarita Lake, basically the dam, all the way to the Monterey County line. In addition, we designate the Salinas River Trail.
Will there be improvements required, or is it just a designation of existing open areas, or will there need to be actual trail designation, clearance, maintenance?
Yes, we would anticipate, again, if it was multi-use, there might be a Class 1 bicycle path along portions mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. It would likely be fenced. There would be interpretive areas. And it would also, we would fence areas to literally keep people out of the river and portions as well to protect that resource.
Does the Parks Department have a fund, like, for instance, modeled after the Kit Fox Mitigation Fund? Does the Parks Department have a fund that these developers pay into as these projects come forward that would provide for funding to actually do the improvements once we have all the easements or a majority of the easements in place?
No. Typically, our maintenance money comes from the general fund, and as we all know, the general fund isn't doing very good lately. Not in regard to this county, just statewide where everybody's having problems. What we have done in certain cases is ask developers for endowments. For example, the Monarch Grove development that's in Los Osos, they provided, I don't remember how much, about 10 acres of open space, and they provided about a $50,000 endowment. Down in Napomo, we got 20 acres of open space, and again, to maintain that property, mm-hmm. we got, in that case, a $75,000 endowment. And the endowment stays in the bank. We just use the interest to pay for maintenance.
Is there an endowment in this case?
At this point, we've talked to the developer. I don't know if he's interested. There was some discussion of giving the property to us, and we said we would gladly take the Salinas River, but we do need an endowment to go with it, just because we're so hard hit for maintenance money these days.
So is that still something that staff is negotiating, or has that been decided that is not going to happen?
I think at this point, the way the project's written, it's the Homeowners Association would be taking the river. And we would take the trail, the Homeowners Association would take
but
the river.
Who's going to be responsible for funding the improvements and the maintenance of the trail?
Well, it would eventually be the County Parks Department.
So I think it might be appropriate then to if the commission is so inclined, I think it would be appropriate for us to request some sort of either endowment or direct payment or responsibility on the homeowners association. I mean, the point being that it's wonderful that they're, you know, proposing or that they're being required actually to dedicate the easement or provide the public access. But if the county is not in a position to actually maintain it so that it results in a realistic net public benefit, I think we should require that of either the developer or the homeowners association at this stage. Maybe Parks can look at the possibility, you know, in the future of creating some kind of a fund, because this sounds like a pretty comprehensive trail all the way from Santa Margarita Lake. I think perhaps we need to have a fund that developers pay into as projects come forward so that this trail we can, you know, actually enjoy it before, you know,
we
pass on to the next dimension, whatever that dimension may be.
And some developers have been more than willing to step forward mm-hmm. and help us out, and
sure,
others
but
have smaller projects, mm-hmm. and it's more of a problem financially for them to do that.
Right, and I'm sure that there would be a lot of variety, but it would be great to have a fund that could accrue, because you have to, in order to do an endowment, the contribution has to be so much greater to get any benefit. I mean, I don't think anybody would suggest, you know, $1 million endowment for this one section of trail, but that's probably what it would take if we're just talking about the interest. So maybe that makes sense. I don't know. I'd like to, you know, kick that around. But until that happens, I guess I'm asking staff if there's some condition that we can add to this project that would either get an endowment or a direct payment or the responsibility of the maintenance for the trail to the homeowners association.
And Jan, I have a question. Has the board ever talked about possibly looking at an assessment district for things like this, for park improvements or maintenance when we look at trails?
I don't know that the board's looked at it. I think because it's a hard economic time right now, probably an assessment is not something that would be pursued. We have worked with different agencies, for example, our Trails Committee and different areas in Napomo where they've been interested in having numerous trails. And in those cases, they have, in fact, brought money to the table to help maintain certain areas and offered the services of volunteers groups. But we haven't really gotten to the point of an assessment.
Yeah, it just seems as more new subdivisions come forward that this might be a good opportunity, you know, as they make improvements, that as new subdivisions come forward that we look at new assessment districts. But if the board hasn't looked at it doesn't seem that the Planning Commission has the authority
to do
that.
And just as an update, too, we are doing our Parks and Rec element, and one of the recommendations in the Park and Rec, and in fact, see if I remember this right, I think this project is south of North River Road, and we own 60 acres of the river right nearby this property. So
great.
We're getting a nice contiguous piece. So again, that it would make sense. We would gladly take the ownership. We just need some guarantee okay. that we have maintenance money.
So, Ms. Griffin, can we add as a condition an endowment? Do we have a figure, Jan, of what would be a realistic endowment that would generate the kind of interest
well,
that would
again, we're talking about, this is a 12-acre parcel, about $100,000 in an endowment.
Okay. So can we add a condition for a $100,000 endowment for maintenance of the trail corridor?
I'm going to defer that to council.
Well, you know what I'd like to do at this time, because we're past 10 o'clock, we usually take our break. Maybe county council and staff could talk about that, if you don't mind. I know some of the commissioners would like to take a break at this time. So let's take a 15-minute break and return at about 20 after 10.